This is a Rooster Teeth production.
This is episode 22.
Is that a new hat?
It's from the All-Star Game.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I like the underbill.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Not bad. They put like the little stars, little All-Star thing.
Did you root for the Astros after the Padres got out?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Everybody did, right?
Yeah.
They're super popular, those Astros.
The Phillies Philadelphia is the new Boston.
Yeah.
You need to keep them down for as long as possible before they become the Red Sox. So they lost two championships in a day. It was pretty great. Last episode, we were at Turnstile.
Oh,
it was
yeah.
almost too cold.
But it's not the case today.
Jesus Christ.
We talked about the patience of Job. We talked about playing pickup basketball at the IBM campus, something coming out of the woods on a train track, scooter top speeds, Bernie versus Jeff's burritos, and Target trip. But that was all the last episode, so this is the new episode.
We tried to do our Austin Java redemption today, but apparently every Austin Java in Austin is closed except for one. There's only one left, and it is clear on the other side of town from our studio. So
never,
we went there anyway.
Never knew it existed.
It's off Menchaca, which used to be Manchaca, but it's pronounced Manchac.
Gus takes issue with something that he's known. This has been that way forever.
It's been that way forever. So we came, we went there. There's no place to record, so we had to go down the street to a park I've probably driven by a million times but never actually been to.
Yeah.
Oh, I haven't even tried the coffee yet.
What's this place called?
Austin Java. Wait, I just
said
Garrison
Park.
Garrison Park.
Yeah. There's a pool and it's sideways, it's tilted.
What?
Gus took a drink of his coffee.
That's the most strong. Animated Gus I've seen in years.
That's strong. That's all espresso. Holy crap. That's like all the coffee that was missing from the Turnstile coffee ended up in here somehow. I don't know how your cold brew is, but that is a strong Americano.
Bland.
It is the most.
It's better than Turnstile.
It is.
Because it's not watery. But
yeah,
it's,
but it's just sort of, it tastes hollow. I think hollow is a word.
It's got a hint of coffee.
Yeah.
Your cold brew is really foamy at the top, too.
Yeah, I think it's probably on nitro, which is a really great gimmick if you're excited to see something like that.
Yeah.
But I never am because I feel like that's to hide that it doesn't taste like anything.
I'm glad to hear you say that, Eric, because I made some coffee this morning, and I was afraid maybe I'd burned out my coffee receptors or something because I made it a little too strong. But yeah, there's not much there.
No.
It's all in mine.
It's a weak cup.
It's all over here.
If you want to drink coffee vagaries, I think this is the place to go.
The whole place is a vagary. You said, like, this is these people come here every day. This is like a local spot for people who live down here, and I just said, bummer.
I wasn't being insulting. You were. I was just saying, like, here we are on the ass end of town. I haven't been here. I mean, used to live fucking 10 blocks from here down on William
Cannon.
Oh,
yeah, you did, yeah.
When I first moved to Austin. Not terribly far from the 4th RTE office, Ralph Albinato.
It was the 4th, wow.
Yeah, it's fucking crazy, dude. An area that we all spent a lot of time in a long time ago. Had no fucking clue that Austin Java was there. And I was just saying to you, like, there are people that this is their daily routine. Like, this is the coffee shop in their neighborhood they go to every day. And you were like, poor sons of bitches.
Yeah.
I was approaching it from that angle. I was just like, well, there's like a whole little micro world going on right here. The little society of people that get up every day and go work on their laptops at fucking Austin Java.
So the sign and the color scheme is all yellow. It used to be purple, right?
It did, yeah.
Like, what happened? Like, yellow is the opposite of purple on the color wheel. That's now I know why they closed them all.
Yeah.
Yellow's not as inviting as purple is.
Well, here's the thing. Purple's a royal color, right? Maybe they were afraid they were appealing to the wrong audience. Maybe they're trying to be too fancy and they tried to find that maybe they tried to rework it to be a color of the people.
Gotcha. Yellow.
Yeah.
Okay.
You got to be here's the thing that you don't understand, I guess. You got to be really top of funnel with this stuff. You got to cast the widest net. You got to catch, you know, the most people. And just bring them in.
How many Austin Java do you think there were at its peak? How many locations? Because I can think of the one. If I had to guess, I would say like five.
I would say five.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's go through. The first one I knew about, and the one that I don't like for some reason that I can't remember.
No,
we both decided, I think, in a past episode that neither of us likes Austin Java. Neither of us knows why.
That's why we're doing the Austin Java Redemption today.
The one on Lamar and
12th or so, yeah.
Or so. There was the one across, there was the one that was in the Austin,
City Hall?
City Hall.
Yeah.
On 2nd Street. Apparently this yellow version down on Manchac. I feel like there was at least
Manchac.
One Norther.
One more further north. Yeah. I know there's at least another one or two. I can't think of them. Those are the only three I can think of off the top of my head right now.
Eric, go on the Wayback Machine to AustinJava.com in 2004.
No, I don't think he is.
I've only ever been to the one that was on second because we would come for RTX.
Yeah.
And we would go across the street, me and Garrett from Mega 64, we'd go across the street, get a coffee and some tacos. And the first time we came, it was like, dude, Austin rules. This is so cool. Breakfast tacos and you get a cup of coffee. It was like, wow. It's so, wow, how impressive. And then every year, every subsequent year, it was like, this is less special.
Now you live here. Man, RTX, that's a whole thing. I can't believe you guys would walk around to Austin Java in the summer, because that event's like in July and it's hot as hell.
It's a pretty good walk.
Well, that's the thing. We were across the street. The hotel we were staying the street from that Austin Java. And that then we would walk from there to the convention center as early in the morning as we could before it got so hot. And I remember walking down the street and people would walk just by and go, hey, how's it going? Hey, good morning.
Yeah.
And it was, I'm not used to that. I was not used to that before I moved here. Very weird.
The only reason, so that's like hot. I wish we could have that event at a different time of the year just because it's so oppressively hot. The first year we had that event was in 2011, and it was at a field not too far from here, actually, a little south of here. In 2012 was the first year that we had it at the convention center.
Do you think that field is still an empty field?
What?
Do you think the field is still an empty
field?
Oh, no,
they built
field?
Something there.
Did they really?
Yeah. Office, like a little office complex thing.
Hmm.
So 2012 was the first year we had it at the convention center. And I remember after we did, I used to run the event back then. And after we finished the 2011 event, I was like, all right, cool, this is going well. Well, let's have it at the convention center. I scheduled a meeting with the convention center people, like to try to book dates. And they looked at me like I was stupid, because I was. And I was like, yeah, it was like May 2011. I was like, yeah, I want to book the convention center for an event in 2012. They're like, well, normally we book these out like 2 or 3 years in advance.
Wow, really?
Yeah. I learned a lot. And they're like, the only dates we have available in 2012 is 4th of July weekend. And you can have, you know, Exhibit Hall 1. I was like, okay, great. We'll take it. And the only reason those dates were available is because no one was stupid enough to have an event in Austin in the heat of the summer on 4th of July weekend. And we've kind of stuck with it. You know, it was like, okay, that's kind of our dates. You know, and sometimes we have to move it a little bit because of calendar issues or other events that are going on. But, man, I really wish we could move it. Like, South by Southwest is in March. ACL and F1 are in October. And that's because those are huge events. And that's, like, the best weather and the most ideal time to visit Austin. We're the idiots having our event out there in July in the heat of the summer.
South by Southwest being in March is probably the main reason this city is successful right now.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's because everybody comes to Austin in March when it's 78 degrees and we got weather like Southern California.
Yep.
And it's fucking gorgeous 100% of the time. And then they turn around and go home and pack up a bag and move here. And then 3 weeks later, it's 110 degrees.
I feel like people are constantly warned about the heat and about how hot it gets and how long the heat lasts. And still, regardless of that, you still hear about people moving here and then after less than a year leaving because they can't deal with it. It's no one should live here. I don't get it.
I went for a walk yesterday, and when I left my house, it was like 71 degrees, and I thought, I'm going to go walk for like an hour, hour and a half, listen to a podcast, listen to some Bill Simmons or something, and put on this is like a little light jacket because it was like 71 and breezy, and by the time I got home, it was like 86 degrees, and I was sweating like a fucking asshole.
Yeah. It's that weird time of year where I was driving around probably noonish yesterday, and I saw like these two women crossing the street wearing sweaters that they obviously had put on when they left wherever they live in the morning, and they just looked miserable. It's like, it's way too hot to be wearing a sweater right now.
It's way too goddamn hot.
It's, 77 right now. So it's not unbearable, but it also rained this morning, so it's that muggy, awful kind of day. I hate it. I don't know if you want to talk about RTX much. We kind of mentioned the dates, and it got me thinking about that.
What's the most embarrassing thing that's ever happened to you at RTX?
Most embarrassing thing that ever happened to me at
RTX.
I'll
pose that question to both of you.
God, I don't know. I don't embarrass easily, so that's a tough one. Mm. I think you're maybe kind of the same. I had to leave the stage once. I was on a panel with Kind of Funny, and Greg Miller hit me over the head with a prop fake bottle that shattered, mm-hmm. and it cut up my forehead.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and I was like... Like, I pretended like, you know, the fake bottle knocked me out and I was laying on the ground and I was like, I can feel liquid all over my forehead. Like, oh, I think the bottle cut me. I had to, like, jump up and be like, all right, be right back. And I had to, like, run off stage and get, like, first aid real quick behind the stage and then come back out. Felt a little woozy after that.
Why didn't you just get up and then, like, you were bleeding everywhere and then you could have been, like, a hero who fought from underneath. You could have been the underdog.
I was a little disoriented, and I was not expecting to see blood on myself, so I was like, let me go take care of this real fast. I'll be right back.
I don't know if it's the most embarrassing, but the time where I wanted to curl up in a ball and disappear was when Gus and Barbara were running the convention. We asked Gus how it was going, and he's like, it's great. We're taking care of it. It's awesome. And we asked Barbara how it was going, and she gave it a beat and then started crying. And we all just went, oh, no. Oh, God. Oh, no, 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 no. Oh, no.
It was incredibly stressful. I think, you know me. It's like, it's always trying to put the best face on.
Yes.
And just trying to be like, perform through it and get through it.
It's that Gen X mentality.
Maintain that illusion. But, man, there were some... rough years. There were some really rough years. What about you? What's your most embarrassing?
I only pose the question because when I think of RTX now, the first thing that pops into my head is, it was like maybe RTX like 6 years ago.
Okay.
5 years ago, maybe. Going in on a scooter and like one of those little rented scooters. And I hit a curb wrong, and I wiped out, and I wrecked, and I rolled like 15 feet and landed, and I got stopped by a trash can, and I wrapped around the trash can, and like 40 Rooster Teeth community members ran over to help me up. And they're like, are you okay, Jeff? Are you fine? And I'm like, yeah, I'm okay. And I was all bloody and fucking wrapped up, like laying on a trash can, and that was not my finest moment.
No, that's not great. I feel like the event has been through... several iterations about what the event is, and I think we always struggle ourselves trying to identify what is the event and like the best way to execute on it. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think we're continuing to try to figure that out, and I think that's part of the fun of it, is trying to figure it out and not being afraid to do something different. And I'd really like to see us fully lean into that and do something off the wall, nuts.
Mm.
I used to, back when I was running events, I used to always pitch these crazy ideas that, because I had no background in event planning.
Yeah.
And, you know, we hired on people who did, and we worked with companies who, that's all they do is do events. Yeah. And I would pitch ideas that would just have every event professional in the room, like, put their head in their hands and be like, why? Or no. Maybe we should go back and revisit some of those ideas and do them. Just because people think they're a bad idea doesn't automatically make them a bad idea.
Just because I'm in a room full of professionals and they all put their head in their hands doesn't mean I'm an idiot. Can you give us an idea of some of your ideas?
One of my ideas was to have no signs anywhere.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. And,
why would you do that?
Because then you encourage people to explore and find things without actually telling them exactly where to go.
You're wrong.
And that you could have like cool pop-up events hidden around and that there is no signage.
I'm being nice to you because I like you. If I was in a room and somebody pitched that idea, I don't know that I would ever listen to another idea they pitched.
I don't know if you've seen it. There's a poster somewhere around the studio. It's like a drawing of me wearing like those X-ray glasses. They got like swirlies on them. And it says RTX, chaos is fun. That they made that in response to that suggestion. Or I should say the event planning company made that in response to that suggestion. It was like unofficial art. It was like just like an idea if we leaned into the chaos aspect.
I already don't like being at conventions. Trying to get around in conventions is a headache, and I have to stop and ask people, and there are already signs. To take the signs away, that's so obtuse. I don't even know how you can, like, yes and it. That's a no but all the way, bud.
I don't know. I don't know about you guys. I Everyone's disagreeing with me. I feel like I'm getting bullied here. Nobody wants to hear the truth that it's really a great idea.
That should be the name of your autobiography. Nobody wants to hear the truth. That's the real story.
Do you have any other ideas that everyone said no to immediately?
Yes, but
you want to use them?
I want to use them.
Yeah.
So I don't want to say all of them. That's the one I'll give you. That one I'll admit will probably never get used. But I do have a lot of other ideas that I would like to see revisited.
You could the bucket okay, of okay. unused ideas in Rooster Teeth. Yeah. You could swim in like Uncle Scrooge's money. Yeah.
So on a tangent to that one. I had an idea. God, I don't think we'll ever do this. That's the only reason I'm saying it. I had an idea for something I called Secret RTX, which is you hold the event and you don't tell anyone where it is. It's like you have the floor with the exhibitors and stuff, but then every panel and every event is a secret, and people have to find it. And it's distributed all around downtown Austin, like at whatever random venue at random times, and it's all word of mouth. There's no, again... It's like an extension of the no signage.
Let me tell you an idea I have. Here's an idea that dabbles in the themes that Gus is going for that we were actually going to do that we'll never do now. The time has passed. Okay. That I think it scratches what he's talking about, but in a
plausible way.
Plausible way. You know, years ago, we did this video called Uno the Movie that got like a bunch of views, like 7-10 million views, whatever. And people always wanted a sequel, and we didn't want to, and we have since done the sequel. We did the Uno live stream, the 36-hour live stream, whatever. But we did that like 6 years after the original movie. The original idea for how to follow up Uno the Movie was, and we were, thank the pandemic, this didn't happen. The year of the pandemic, when we had to cancel RTX, I had already secured the Paramount Theater for the Friday night. We were going to have a private, intimate Achievement Hunter event that we didn't say what it was. And we were going to give 1,100 free tickets away to members. And then the only rule was they couldn't post about it. They couldn't talk about what was happening or what they'd seen. And when they got there, they were going to go into the Paramount, having no idea what they were walking into. On the stage was just going to be the Uno set. We were going to show up in tuxedos like it was Baccarat with James Bond. And then we were going to have like waiters and waitresses come and bring us drinks and stuff. And we were going to do Uno 2 live in front of a studio audience. And it was just going to go as long as it went. We figured it'd go like 3 hours. We had the place till midnight or something. So there was going to be a hard out. But we could have steered it out early, I'm sure. And then that was like our idea of achieving Gus's surprise and delight without making it impossible to find or enjoy.
But that's...
And I would love to have done that. And that was and I don't think the audience knows that, but that was the plan for Uno 2 from the get-go.
That would have been real fun. I like that idea of...
And I had already had it. I mean, they were trying to figure out how to disseminate the tickets when RTX, or when we had to cancel because of COVID.
Random bag insertion.
But that makes sense for one event.
Yeah.
You're talking about an entire convention.
Yeah.
Spread out across an entire downtown. The thing that I think of is during...
Someone's singing.
Tarzan was here. During E3 one year, there was a pop-up thing that was like, I think like Popsic branded.
Uh-huh.
That where there were like tattoos and all this stuff or whatever.
Oh,
and like,
yeah.
That pop-up thing, I would love to do stuff like that for these shows.
Yeah.
Where it's like we're coming to Denver and it's going to be in this spot, this coffee shop, whatever. We're taking it over for X amount of hours and we're doing this thing in a meet and greet or whatever. That to me makes sense. A whole convention.
What if you say you're going to Denver and people have to figure out where and when?
An invite only thing where you don't know exactly what it's going to be, but you kind of have an idea about what you might get into is very interesting to me for a single event.
Yeah, yeah, like convention.
No, not
I think I think if your product is ARGs or yeah. You know what I mean, you can get away with something like that, Gus. But
I love that shit. It makes me. I think
that's not who we are, though.
No,
I think I was. Influenced a lot by those early ARGs and by like that old game, what was it?
Majestic.
That was it. From what was it? The late 90s, early 2000s.
We were living together, like probably 2001,
2002, 2001. I don't know if you remember that game. It was EA, wasn't it?
Yeah, I played it. I fucking signed up for it. I got the calls.
It's like you signed up for it, and there was no like game Well, there was, but there was no game client in the traditional sense that you're thinking of.
Yeah.
It was all like you submitted your phone number, your email address, and your instant messenger handles, and it was all like they would contact. It was like a spy story that was told via these media forms. Like you would get messages or phone calls
and
or voicemails or letters.
Shit and figure it out.
Yeah, figure it out. And it was all like trying to tell a story. Without having like, without like launching a game and looking around, kind of blurring the line between reality and fiction.
It must have been the first ARG.
Maybe.
Like it was before I Love Bees and all that stuff,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like if QAnon was real.
Jesus Christ.
And there was a way to participate. it was kind of like that.
Do you think all the QAnon people are just doing a clever ARG that we're not in on?
Dude, they could be paying customers $4.99 a month.
I think ARGs in general, like, Lost was probably, like, the last media thing that I, like, gave so much to because I was enjoying myself so much. Since then, so many other shows and things like that ask so much of you to be involved, even just through, like, your time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, man, when they were few and far between, it was really cool, and then it became, like, a glut.
Yeah.
Of that
yeah.
stuff.
And it could be a lot of ones that weren't done well.
Yes. Yeah, a lot of like half thought out ideas where somebody in a room said, well, I've seen an ARG, we should do that. And then nobody was in charge of it.
Yeah.
So it was just sort of like half an idea. That sucks. And enough of those and you just go, well, I'm done with this. I'm over. Like Cloverfield had like all the slusho stuff or whatever the fuck it was. And it was like, this is cool. What's the end game?
There, in fact, it's funny you mentioned Lost. I bought that Blu-ray box set when it came out.
Yeah.
And even the box set itself was like a game. There was like things hidden in the box set and like secret messages. And in fact, like one of the bonus discs was hidden in the packaging. Yep. You had to like figure out how to open it and realize like, oh, there's something else here. And like open it up and get an extra disc out of it. I thought that was like a really well put together box set.
And that is how we approached all of our DVDs too, back when we made them.
Good God. I just had like a flashback to DVD testing.
Dude.
So
the audience has no idea.
You don't realize this because you've... I'm saying this you to anyone listening, unless you've authored a DVD, you don't realize, and I get this is fucking ancient now, nobody cares anymore, but you don't realize how every DVD player treats a DVD differently.
Yeah.
And you have to, when you're designing like the menus and the layout
the
and the buttons and the, all of that, like every player will interpret everything a little differently. So we would have to make a DVD, then try to test it on as many different DVD players as possible. You author it, then inevitably there's some obscure DVD player where, oh, it just autoplays through this, all the special features one after another, and there's no chance for the whoever's watching it to
or
actually give any input.
Yeah, it and also we made it, it was a point of pride with us that we wanted to put as much bonus content on the DVD as actual content. So if a season rang in at 2 hours, we wanted to have at least 2 hours of bonus content. And so we would, I remember when we initially were going to submit the DVD, we're still working at Telnetwork, it was in Bernie's office, he was holding the DVD and we were going to put it in the mail and send it up to Dallas to get it printed. And we were both looking at it and like, it's just, we didn't do enough. And so we decided to go back and I don't know if you remember this, you were involved, we spent like another 7 days just working all night long, adding more bonus features, and we got really into Easter eggs at that point. And then we set a bar that we felt like we had to beat every subsequent DVD. And so by the time we were making like season 5 and 6 DVDs, we would have like 40 Easter eggs or 50 Easter eggs a DVD that we had to film, that we had to test.
Yeah.
It would be like, what? It's right, down, left, right, up, and then Donut says the thing.
Yeah.
Fuck. And then you test that on... So if there's 6 hours of content on a DVD, you got to test 6 hours of content on every DVD
on every player
on Earth.
We made sure to hit the game consoles because we figured a lot of the audience would have game consoles playing in there. So that was like the focus of the bulk of our testing. And then whatever other DVD players we had or we could buy to try to test them. The Easter egg I remember that gave us the most trouble was it season 3 where if you left it on the title screen... and didn't make a selection after a while, like Doc would show up and steal one of your menu options.
Oh my God.
Yeah, but there was one brand of DVD player where as soon as you put the disc in, Doc would immediately begin stealing all your menu options. So you couldn't actually watch anything on the disc because it would just like start automatically going through every one of those.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, there's nothing left to choose from. I think that ended up
having to get reauthored, if I remember right. Like so that disc went out. Then it's like when we had to print the second round, it's like, all right, let's fix that. So that
we had to send a replacement disc to certain people, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, so you've got back-to-back meetings, you've got errands to run, and you've got chores to take care of. What's the secret to clearing your to-do list? Have more kids? Yes, but it takes 12 to 14 years before they're good enough at chores to really help out. And actually, in the short term, it makes it a lot worse because you have to do a lot of chores for them, especially for like the first 4 or 5 years. That's why I recommend DoorDash. You can get dinner, household essentials, and everything on your grocery list delivered to you. Every time you place an order for pickup or delivery, you are setting off a chain reaction that helps give back to the people who make your neighborhood unique. With over 300,000 partners, you can support your neighborhood go-tos, like your favorite sandwich shop right down the road. They probably got some pretty baller pastrami, or maybe the mom and pop convenience store right down the road that goes out of their way to have some really thoughtful selections in terms of food and drinks, which I appreciate, or even choose from national restaurants like the ones that you might eat. I'm not going to name them. You know what a national restaurant is. For a limited time, our listeners can get 50% off up to a $20 value and a zero delivery fees when you download the DoorDash app and enter code ANMA. That's ANMA. What does it stand for? It stands for savings. That's one thing I do know. That is 50% off to up to a $20 value and zero delivery fees when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter that mysterious code ANMA. Don't forget, that's ANMA for 50% off, up to a $20 value and zero delivery fees with DoorDash. Subject to change. Terms apply. Thank you.
Let me ask you this. Is that something that you wish you could still do?
No.
Well, you didn't even finish.
Well, I was going to say, or maybe you're just nostalgic for, but I think Jeff answered that question immediately.
It was hard.
It was, like, we did that with Mega 64. It was like a lot of that stuff and authoring and testing or whatever. But there's still, I have like a nostalgia for that where it's like these insane little Easter eggs to hide on stuff. They were so cool, and you can never, I don't know how you could ever do that again now.
I miss being clever. I miss when media allowed you to be clever. And then you, and because it felt like you could reward people who wanted to also be clever.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Like now, if you stream stuff, you see the time bar, right? You see, you know, like, oh, there's extra something at the end of this, or, you know, you skip ahead past the credits to find something. It's difficult to try to hide something. So to get around that, I remember when we released episode 100, we wanted to try to get around that. Wanted to put out different versions of the episode, but couldn't figure out a way to do it without spoiling it. So when we put, you know, this is back before YouTube, right? Like you would click on a link on our website to download the video. I think we made every letter in the link a different link. So it all, when you looked at it, it looked like one link to download the video, but really every letter and every space was a different link. So depending on where you clicked on the link, you got a different version of the video downloaded.
We had
and
seven different.
You couldn't tell until you like downloaded it, went to the comments to talk about it. It's like, oh yeah, it was weird at the end when this happened. Like, what are you talking about? The end of the video was this. Like to try to create that.
It was our
confusion.
Clue moment. Well, like when Clue came out with three different endings and where you live, depending on which one you got. Yeah.
God, what a pain in the ass.
That was a pain in the ass. That was fun though.
It was fun.
That was when we saw Gavin, when Gavin fell asleep standing up in the closet.
there was some long, long days and weeks.
That day, I remember Gavin and I went home after, because he fell asleep standing up, and we were like, we gotta get some sleep. We'd been there for like fucking, I don't know, 4 days straight
days,
or something.
Yeah.
And I fell asleep on I-35 driving home, and Gavin had to like shake me awake while I was driving us home.
It was brutal. And then, I don't know if you remember this, like, I got home, that's when I lived off of Lake Austin Boulevard, passed the fuck out, and then the servers had all died, because once people figured out you could download multiple files, they would go back and start downloading, so it was like everything had crashed, but my phone was dead, because I'd been at work for like 4 days, so nobody could call me. You had to come over and bang on my window to wake me up in the middle of the night. Do you remember that?
I don't.
And I was like, what the hell's going on? And you're like, the servers are down. You got to go fix them. And I had to drive over to our co-location facility off of Montopolis and reboot everything and get everything working again. It was like I had my Helio Ocean at the time, I think.
Yeah.
And it was just dead. And So you you got to sleep a little bit. Then you had to drive across town to go wake me up. You went back home to sleep. Then I had to go back over to the servers to get them back up and running so everyone could download stuff again. Talk about a fucking pain in the ass.
I love reminiscing.
It's fun to talk about now.
I wouldn't want to go through those days again.
God.
Now, that's a that like building a company and going through all that. That's a young person's endeavor. I wouldn't want to do that in my 50s.
Mm-hmm. No. I like sleep too much.
So much effort and commitment, you know.
Yeah. Oh man. That was that I think that was the peak of that kind of stuff was right around that time. Well, no, I take it back. No, it was not. we definitely kept upping the bar after that, because I think about like some of the shit that happened after that at the Congress office.
I would say the Congress office was the
peak of that stuff for sure. Yeah. Well, good times.
How do you qualify the peak of that stuff? Like by quality or quantity?
Quantity.
Okay.
Yeah, quantity for sure. That's like we talked about this before, like making the NCAA like Jumbotron videos, the Mountain Dew videos, trying to figure out all that reconstruction stuff, and it was just any one of those projects was too much work. I mean, there were like three or four of them at any given time.
Reconstruction. That's when we started working with Eddie Rivas.
Yeah, we met him then. He came up from
he'd come up from Houston to help us with some of that stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that was at the Congress office, and that was in itself a huge pain in the ass. just shaking his head.
Man, that's fucking office. That was so cool and so shitty at the same time.
We should go back and we should do an episode of Anima from like the hideout, which was right next to where the office used to be.
Right. Yeah.
Downtown. The office itself is gone. That building was demolished. It's a hotel now.
Hotel now.
But I have so many memories of that block and specifically that alley behind the that office, because we would walk in and out. There was a door that led to the alley, and that's how we would walk in and out a lot. There was a door to the front too, but lots of times you'd walk in and out of the alley, and that alley is filthy. I lost track of how many times I stepped over human shit just to get into the door to go up to work. There was a...
I used to call it Stab Alley.
Yeah.
Nice.
There was a restaurant under us, and during the lunch rush, you could smell... It wasn't really bad. Maybe we got used to it, but you could smell when their vent hoods turned on, and like all of the smell would start coming upstairs to where we were. It was a pita pit.
I got sick of pitas real fast.
Yeah, because it was easy. It was like we had a door that went downstairs directly into the restaurant.
Oh, okay.
So we could just like, without going outside, walk down, go into the restaurant, and get food. And there were so many signs in that stairwell that said, "Do not go upstairs. Private property." There were signs on the door that said,
"This is not a part of Pita Pit.
This is not the Pita Pit. Do not knock on this door. Do not try to open this door." But it was like a nonstop. You would hear people jiggling that door handle or knocking on the door trying to get in and be like, "What are you doing? Did you not see the 15 fucking signs?" And like people with a pita in their hand and a soda, like, I can't help you. You can't come eat up here. Go find somewhere else to eat."
That was also, I guess because we were so centrally located, that was when tours started to happen and really got out of control. I don't know if you remember that.
Tours?
Yeah, like people would show up and want a tour, and which we were always happy to accommodate, except for a lot of the stuff we're doing is NDA, and so we'd have to like do a sweep around the office and turn off monitors and stuff, and it started to become really detrimental to the work process. And I remember one day, the day that it kind of broke me, was you guys were all out of town. It was just Jack and I there. And might have been around the time we were making Supreme Surrender. Like, okay. I don't know if Jack was a full-time employee yet or if he was just helping us out on loan. But it was in that era. And Jack and I gave 16 tours on a Friday.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
And we were like, we got to do something
not sustainable.
Yeah.
The other thing about that location was that it's close to downtown. It was 7th and Congress. And during South by Southwest, like every possible place you could have a band has a band.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the Pita Pit downstairs would have shows during South by Southwest. And I remember I remember one year we were all trying to work and there was a band performing downstairs under us. First of all, it sounded like a pirate was singing.
Yeah.
We went down there and it was like a band where they did like pirate sea shanties.
Oh, God.
And this is before like sea shanties became popular a couple years ago. This was back in
These guys were on the bleeding edge of annoying.
And it's like, wow, that's really annoying, but we can keep working. So we go back upstairs and keep working. They wrap up their set, and the next band comes on, and it's a band called Four on the Floor. Uh-huh. All drummers. All drums. And it was...
How do you remember the band name?
Because it was so fucking dumb. Four on the Floor.
That rules.
And the drums were so intense that you could see on our computers that... The hard drives were being jostled around so much that they couldn't read and write at their normal rate because the heads were skipping. So it's like, we have to shut down. Like, we literally cannot do any work as long as Four on the Floor is performing downstairs. Yeah. We had to stop. Then we went down. We went, like, walked around the block for a bit until they were done playing. And then we're like, all right, now we can get back to work. It was like the desks on the floor were shaking. we couldn't, like, you couldn't sit. It was like something out of a cartoon where, like, someone's trying to sleep and everything's shaking.
Four on the Floor is an American rock and roll band from Minneapolis, Minnesota. The group is known for each member playing a bass drum and for writing all their songs in 4/4 time.
I've never thought to look them up.
Are they still together? Rules so hard.
Oh, you guys see them play sometime.
That was them. If you ever have a chance to
check out Four on the Floor.
Check out Four on the Floor. They performed at the Peter Pit.
So
probably
crazy.
In 08 or 09.
Dude, they're still going. They got shows like a couple days ago.
Wow.
Hell yeah. Way to go, Four on the Floor. All right.
It's official band of Anma.
I don't remember the name of the Pirate Sea Shanty band, though.
I don't need to shout them out. Okay, let me ask you this, because I do want to save more of the Congress stuff for... I do think the next episode we should go to Hideout.
Okay.
Okay.
So I think
I don't know where we'll record there, but we'll figure it
there's
out.
There's nowhere... Maybe we can get them to let us record in the theater in the back.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah, it's a good idea. Nick also gave me this little Zoom control thing so we can do it walking, so we don't have to hold microphones and stuff. So it'll sound worse, but I don't
care.
It's
more convenient.
Yeah, the stories will be better.
Audio texture.
I want to stick around this area.
Oh.
Because,
we're
Jeff,
here.
You said you used to live around here.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, a long time ago.
When I first moved back to Austin, well, I shouldn't say moved back. I never lived in Austin. Like, I lived in Killeen and Coppers Cove when I was in the Army, which is about an hour and 15 minutes, hour and a half north of here. And so you've never been there, I assume. Yeah. But if you were to go to Killeen or Coppers Cove or Harker Heights or any of that area, Belton, you would learn that it's like a third world country. It's just pawn shops and rubble. And it just exists. There's about 50,000 soldiers on Fort Hood, and every business exists to take the meager amounts of money they have away from them. It's really a depressing area. And so it sucked to live there. And so the reason I fell in love with Austin is because I'd get off work at 5 o'clock and I would just get in a car and I would drive down to Austin and I wouldn't come home till 4 a.m, get like 2 hours of sleep and then go to PT. And so I was here 7 days a week unless I was deployed.
In which case it was 2 days a week.
It was 2 days a week. And so I fell in love with Austin through that, so that when I finally left New Jersey, when I got out of the Army and I was like, what the fuck am I doing here? It's cold and brutal and the snow is gray and it's just dismal. And I was on tour with a band and we played, it was December 13th, 1998. And we played in Austin at a place that used to be called the Typewriter Museum over in East Austin. It's a restaurant now. And it was like 78 degrees and we were all wearing shorts and we went swimming. And I thought, why the fuck am I living in New Jersey?
Yeah.
So I went home on December 17th. I packed up everything I had, my first wife and I, and we moved to Austin December 17th, 1998. So we got here like December 18th, mm-hmm. I think. And I just went to the first apartment complex that said it had availability in the paper, I think, because
that's how
you did it in the 90s. And it was a place called Cooper's Hill on William Cannon. It's no longer called Cooper's Hill, but it's still an apartment complex. And I just rolled up to it and I said, I'd like to rent an apartment. And they said, okay, when do you want to move in? And I was like, well, I got the U-Haul. And I moved in that day.
Wow.
And so that's why I lived over here. It was just like the first place that said I could.
Are you down here at all ever now?
Well, yes, but only because of Bahama Bucks. So
here we go.
I'm upset. Gus and I went through a phase where we were obsessed with snow cones together.
Yes.
There was a snow cone renaissance mm-hmm. in the early 2000s in Austin. It predated all of the trailer park craze that took over the entire country. But there were trailer parks of snow cones all over Austin. And Gus and I got really into them. And then they kind of faded away and died.
Yeah.
And my love for snow cones did not. And so there's this local Texas chain called Bahama Bucks that I go to probably once a week. And it's the closest one to my house. There's like one in Round Rock one in Cedar Park and one down on fucking Stasny. And so we go to that one.
So the trick is, and what we liked is like the soft ice. Like lots of times you think of a
shaved ice.
Yeah. Right. Like you think of a snow cone, it's like that hard, kind of rocky, gravelly ice. That's garbage.
Yeah, it's doo doo. Like, yeah. It's doo-doo in your mouth. You gotta get, like, a mouthful of sugar doo-doo.
Shaved ice that's nice and soft and fluffy. That's the reason we like Snow Beach so much back in the day.
So Bahama Bucks is your go-to.
Yeah, and so I come down here just for... But if it weren't for Bahama Bucks, I probably wouldn't have been down here in 10 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can't think of the last time I've been here in this part of town.
It's like a different city now, too. Like, there's a bunch... When I lived down here, there were no bars down here. There weren't a lot of restaurants.
This was practically outside of town.
Yeah. There are, like... whole communities. There's a place called Little Darlings that everybody loves. It's yeah. owned by the people that made Yellow Jacket Social Club, which you like. There's a whole fucking scene down here. That's a whole other world, and I don't know anything about it.
There's a lot of talk about like South Austin versus North Austin with the river like dividing it. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this is very much like quintessential what you imagine South Austin.
Yeah.
Like this kind of stuff. It's weird. What a natural barrier that creates
yeah.
in the city. And like I guess like what a choke point. Like a lot of our traffic woes are because of the river that the lake that goes through the middle of the city. And that forces like funnels people to like certain choke points that makes everything all fucked up trying to get around this stupid city.
Yeah, we spent a lot of time down here because I lived down there, and then the Rooster Teeth office was down here. For how long were we at Ralph Albaneda?
Like 3 years?
3.5 years, maybe 3 years?
Three, maybe
so
four,
we
yeah.
filmed. I was trying to figure, this is not the park, but I was thinking of a day that you and Brandon and Joel and I all filmed at a park for some reason.
What was it? You don't remember?
I don't remember what. It was around the time that we had like a flat, that same day we filmed at Brandon's apartment complex in a pool with like a flat Gus and a flat Jeff or something.
Oh, it was the best friends thing. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't remember it.
You were like trouncing through the woods with my cutout.
Maybe.
Yeah, yeah. I know that skit. I love that skit.
And it was right around here. I was thinking briefly it might have been this park, but I don't think it was.
I wasn't there. I think it was my cardboard cutout was there, not me for that shot. Unrelated. I just remembered something.
Okay.
What cologne do you wear?
I don't know what it's called.
You don't know what it's called?
Mambo?
It's like a... Yeah. Mambo number 5. It's like a Louis Vuitton cologne. I don't know.
Okay. The reason I ask is after we recorded Anima last week, my car reeked of cologne.
Oh, really?
That's why I asked you to drive today. It was like somehow... You must put it on your chest because it was like on the seatbelt on the passenger side. And it was like... I got in my car. Like, I didn't smell it when you were in the car, but something about it, like, sitting in the sun and baking the day while I was at the office, like, I was like, what the hell is that? And I turned and looked at the passenger seat, and it was like you were still sitting there with me.
I must have smelled great.
No.
He's a good cologne.
I think you smell great.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, no problem.
You know, I'm a huge nerd, Gus. And I've got a perfume allergy.
He does.
Gus. Have a what?
Yeah, I'm super sensitive to fragrances. That's why, like, I have to use, like, unscented deodorant, and I can't wear cologne. Like, all bath products have to be unscented. I have to use fragrance-free detergent, fragrance-free like fabric sheets, dryer sheets.
But you said allergic, or yeah. You just don't?
No,
like
I'm
it?
Allergic.
Yeah, he is.
What?
Yeah,
he's one of those people that shouldn't have made it.
Yeah, no. If this was like 100 years ago, I would have been dead.
Yeah,
like I was. Thankfully, I've grown out of a lot of my allergies. But when I was younger, I was severely allergic to grass and just about every tree you can imagine. Life was hell. I've grown out of a lot of them, but
Gus used to when early on when we would talk about our future and like you know being grown ups and having homes and stuff. Gus used to always be like, "Dude, the first thing I'm gonna do when I buy a house is I'm gonna pour concrete all over the whole yard, and I'll never see grass again. It'll never touch me. I'll never be around it. I'll never cut it. I'll never be allergic to it. It'll never make me itch.
Yeah.
It just won't. I'll just live in a concrete wonderland."
Yeah. It's not as severe anymore, but it still bothers me. I hate springtime when everyone starts cutting their grass.
I hate springtime.
Yeah, because you go through the winter, it's like, oh, this is great. That's fine. Nobody's cutting it. It's fine. It's not in the air. But once everyone starts cutting it, it's like everywhere. You can't get rid. You can't get away from it.
Can't get rid of that grass. It's grass everywhere.
I hate springtime.
So much grass.
Oh my God.
My parents still made me. Oh, that was almost a disaster. Jeff almost got his fingers stuck in the...
You almost
skylocked it. His finger got stuck in the table.
That scared me.
He stuck his finger in the table.
You want to take a picture of that?
Oh, my God. I mean, I don't want him...
I'm not going to go down again. It was like... I went past the knuckle. Okay. I wasn't even thinking.
Oh my God.
I don't remember what I was gonna say something about. Oh. So even though I was allergic to grass, my parents still made me mow the lawn. They thought it was fucking funny. Yeah, they bought me like a little mask. They're like, here, you can wear this, and it's fine. When I grew up on the border, it was like a fucking 110 degrees outside. Like, I'm not wearing the fucking mask.
Well, that's
there.
Why they had you cut the grass. They weren't gonna fucking do it.
I knew somebody who's from Texas who was allergic to horses, and his parents made him ride horses. They're like, you'll get over it eventually. You're in Texas. You're a Texan. You got to ride horses.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It just made him more allergic.
Wow. Man. Is there anything that could happen down? I want to go back to being down in like this area. Because again, this is an area of town I never come to.
Yeah.
You talk about like that natural barrier, like the river. Why am I ever going south of the river?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You're just going to find traffic.
Yeah.
South Park Meadows.
Why would you go to South Park Meadows?
I don't know. Big outdoor mall.
That's where I got these jeans.
There you go.
There's nothing unique there. It's just like.
Just kidding.
Okay.
Dude, honestly. I was sitting here trying to think of the only thing to even talk about down here that was interesting is South Park Meadows used to be a concert venue. But I think we've talked about it.
We did talk about that.
So I was going to say, is there anything at this point that would like, that could happen down here or be down here that would bring you south other than doing this show?
Yes.
Bahama Bucks.
Other than Bahama Bucks, there is a neighborhood over here that I like a lot that I visit sometimes.
Really?
I've talked about it on Face. It is the neighborhood that flooded and the city bought back all the homes and it's turned into like a kind of a wasteland where like nature's reclaimed. It's kind of fun to drive around there. Like I go down there like maybe every 3 or 4 months just to see how it looks now.
So does anyone live there at all or has it all been purchased?
There were out of like 300 or out of like 700 homes, I think there are like 7 or 8 homes left.
That are occupied. So are the other ones just abandoned or were they torn down?
They've all been torn down.
Okay. So there's just like probably concrete slabs that are overgrown with vegetation.
Yeah, it just looks like a road with woods around you and fields around you where like occasionally you'll see like a transformer sticking up where, you know, or that doesn't belong, or like a tree that isn't natural to the area that just, you know, was in somebody's yard.
Right.
That's now unkempt.
I should check that out.
I'll take you over there sometime if you want. It's just if you go down William Cannon east of 35, go down like, I don't know, 3 miles and take
it's like
a
over
light,
by Onion Creek kind of.
Yeah, it's it is on Onion Creek actually. Yeah.
Did you ever see Barbarian, the movie?
Yeah, I watched it like 3 or 4 days ago.
Is that what the neighborhood's like?
Yeah, it's like the neighborhood in Barbarian.
Okay,
that's a lot. That's a great.
Okay, that's like you were describing it. I was like, that's kind of what's making.
So it's interesting too because there's two neighborhoods right that were affected by this. The one is very much like Barbarian. The other one is on a golf course, and so they're tearing down like 3-story, $400,000 houses, and it looks very nice and pristine over there. And then the other neighborhood is a little different.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I really want to see that. I think that sounds really interesting.
It's wild.
Yeah.
They've started to close a lot of it off to the public, though. You probably should see it.
They probably don't want to bother maintaining it.
Well, there's also just like, I think people go there to do needle drugs and stuff, because there's always just like cars parked there at 2 in the afternoon with somebody in there by themselves.
Well, they can just come here.
Looking sketchy. All the people here.
I was going to say there's locks on the baseball fields and you can just do needle drugs out by like these fucking trees. I don't get, why would you lock a baseball field? Let me play baseball.
Yeah.
I don't understand.
What are you gatekeeping?
Yeah.
What are you thinking?
Baseball.
Steal the bases? It makes no sense.
You already steal the bases when you're playing.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
It's a part of the game.
3 strikes and you're out. Well, we're right around that 50-minute mark, so we should review the coffee and talk about, here's the thing. I want to talk about Austin Java quickly and see if it really redeemed itself here, because we also got breakfast tacos.
I can't drink this coffee.
What do you mean?
It's way too strong.
You could take it back to the office and divvy it up and fill some water in.
I could probably put a gallon of water in this and like it would be the correct dilution. It's so strong.
Have a sip.
It's weird because ours was so weak.
It's been watered down a bit by the ice, so it's better. It's actually much better now that it's been watered down with that ice.
Okay, so you guys were against Austin Java. Go ahead.
What was that taco I got? Like a bean and...
Oh, okay. So it was egg, black bean, and cheese.
No, it was potato, black bean, and cheese.
That's right.
That was it. It had black beans and refried beans in it. I was very confused after the first bite. I was like, I mean, pick a lane.
They did. Beans.
That is a first for me.
I've never
28
seen
something
that
years
before.
In Austin, I've never seen black
God,
beans and
man,
refried
I got
beans
all
together.
Like these black beans, but they're not staying in the tortilla. I got to have them stick with something.
Refried beans.
That bean glue.
So weird.
I was super unimpressed. I didn't hate it.
Yeah.
Like, I was sitting here trying to reconnect with whatever it was that I... And I remember being... I remember looking at the floor, the, like, old wooden floor in the one on 12th and Lamar and stewing and being mad, waiting for something, and being like, fuck this place and fuck these people. I'm never coming to this fucking place again. But I don't remember why. But I will say, after spending a day or a morning with the yellow version of Austin Java Co., completely unremarkable.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fine. This is a better, it's a better iced coffee than I had at Turnstile, but I would give it like a six.
It's a matter of location for me.
Yeah.
Like, it's so far from the studio and from where we know, it's like we said, south of the river. I don't think I would ever come here seeking out Austin Java, but I mean, if you live here, it's fine.
Okay, but imagine that there was one by the office. Would you go there for that? For what we just had?
No.
Probably not.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like, they used to be all over the place, and then that's what they're turning in with one location.
It was fine. It was fine. And I'll say this about the tacos, too. And this may only make sense if you have been in Austin for a while, but the tacos were very 2005.
Oh, that's a good way of putting exactly what I ate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was representative of what a breakfast taco was in Austin in like 2004, 2005. Hmm. Yeah.
Hmm. What's your favorite breakfast taco then?
Right now?
Yeah.
I eat at Taco Rito a lot.
Where's that?
There's a couple of
El Taco. Yeah.
I eat there a lot. I like Veracruz.
Oh, Veracruz.
Okay.
Excellent. Yeah. And there's one right by the studio too over there in Mueller.
Yeah, Veracruz is good as fuck.
That place is crazy because they will shut off their online ordering on the weekend.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because the wait is so long.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I've gone there before, but like, oh, I'm right by Veracruz. I'm going to stop in and order something, and waited like an hour to get food.
How about you? They are so busy.
I'm not a big breakfast person. You know, I don't typically eat in the morning. Today I've got a fucking crazy, I need to eat. This is my only chance to eat until like 7 p.m. tonight. But I would go with Veracruz. I think they're pretty solid. It's not necessarily breakfast tacos, but there's a great Mexican place. This sounds like I'm like putting a big asterisk on it, but I'm not. It's a vegan Mexican place. It's called Nissi. They have a brick and mortar up at like Burnett and 183.
Okay.
They have some excellent tacos.
Burnett and 183.
You know where like Denver Trudy's Mattress North and all that shit is?
Yeah.
Yeah, like on the other side of Burnett from Trudy's.
Okay.
Back behind the Olive Garden and all that.
Yeah. Okay.
And they have really good tacos and beans and rice. I think that place is fucking excellent.
And it's vegan?
Yeah, everything's vegan. That's really cool. Really good. Went there just last week.
Okay.
How about you, Eric? What's a good breakfast taco in Austin?
I think Veracruz is great. I think Taco Deli is fine. I think you could get, like, that's the one that I feel like everyone goes to, and you just go, okay, this is whatever.
Talk about 2005 tacos.
Yeah, right? Big time. That's Austin, to me, is that thing.
Here's the deal with Taco Deli.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to a coffee shop in Austin, and you get a breakfast taco, and they give you a Taco Deli taco... You're going to get a 2004 taco.
Yeah.
If you go to Taco Deli and eat in Taco Deli, it's a totally different
quality. Much better.
Totally different quality.
Go to Taco Deli if you can. There's a place way on the east side. We go out and play baseball and kind of hang out and stuff. And it's called like, it's like a Norteños, like chicken place. Mm-hmm. So it's like that flat kind of like grilled chicken they chop up and everything. That's really good. Like this Pollo Norteños place is really good. They used to be a food truck, I guess, and then now it's like a brick and mortar. So it's nice.
There's a food window on Manor called Taco Mex.
Oh, yeah.
That place is fucking awesome.
No,
I don't know about the breakfast tacos. I only got dinner tacos there, but that's
pretty good. The place
fucking
good.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we should start wrapping up, but I want to get a couple of names guessed.
Right.
We got your boy Alex said, "Answer me anything or answer me Austin."
No.
Yeah, I didn't think so. Annoying Men Arguing from Oscar Mike.
That's very very apt. But
I thought that was a pretty good one, too. But Animosity, Austin, no. Oh, this is from Sam. Samuel Whamuel says Ant Manor or Ant Manor.
That's what I was going to say. It's Ant Manor. No, that's not it.
Oh, okay.
How about Anger Me Again?
Also very apt, but no.
No.
We got to be getting close to the name.
Oh, absolutely.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
I've heard some real good ones.
That's not sincere what he just did.
No, it doesn't. It also doesn't help
us. That is sincere. That is absolutely sincere. Ant Manor, so close.
What?
No. That's not sincere.
Bitch. Well, thank you for another episode. If you want to follow us on Twitter, on Instagram, you can. At Anima Podcast, you can check out where we just had a cup of coffee, what the coffee looks like, and see Gus and Jeff cheers a little coffee, which we need a picture of.
We'll do that right now.
That's a good idea. We'll do it while we're recording. Hang on. Let me turn it to the 0.5. Hang on. You got to like really lean it. There we go. That's there a good go. One.
You listen to us take a photo.
Yep. So you can check that out. But I think that's good for us. I want to try to get some merch going that we had some ideas for a while ago. We just have to see when we can actually get it on that print-on-demand stuff. So maybe some merch coming soon. But tell someone about this podcast. Let them know about what we do here and why. And if you can figure out the name, let us know, at Anima Podcast. Don't tweet at me. Tweet at Anima Podcast. Podcast. It's not that hard.
Yeah.
Any final words?
Don't tweet at me either.
Yeah, Gus, he just won't tell you.
Yeah.
I mean, any final words, parting thoughts?
Oh, yeah. Don't tweet at me either.
There you go.
There you go. That's my final
don't
word.
Don't tweet at any of us. But honestly, leave me alone.
I'm going to go touch grass.
I touch the most grass.